Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It is March the 24th, 2017, and as always, it's great getting together with you at the end of the week to play that game of catch-up and figure out what in the world is going on, and maybe what in the world is not going on. Those of you familiar with me know that I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service. Ever since the terror attacks of 9/11, ashes landed on my home. My neighbors were killed. I've not been the same, nor has anybody who lived through that dark day in American history. And I've been a man on a mission trying to wake up as many of our fellow Americans and as many of our supposed alleged leaders as to the real significance of America's borders and America's immigration laws. This isn't about xenophobia. You know, this isn't about shut down the borders, don't let anybody in. It's simply about dealing with immigration in a responsible fashion so that it lives up to the primary goals of our immigration laws, that being protect national security, protect the lives and the livelihoods of Americans. Simple concept. Those of us who live in a house or an apartment practice that concept when we look through peepholes before we admit strangers into our home every day. You would think it's common sense. You would think. But common sense, as some have noted, is not all that common, and so many politicians have been bought and paid for by globalists, by people who see in our borders impediments to great wealth, their wealth. By flooding America with cheap labor from other countries, we have driven down wages and working conditions and expectations of success within our own country. This isn't doing anybody any good. And in fact, the foreign workers who come to America are hammered. They are mistreated very often working under substandard, often dangerous conditions, earning substandard wages. But the substandard wage has become the new American norm. That's what this is about. Organizations such as the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the American Immigration Lawyers Association, there's a laundry list of corporations, executives, and special interest groups who are getting exactly what they want. They are getting the best government money can buy, and we are having the negative impact visited upon us daily, whether it's the violence of the drug trade, of the criminal aliens operating within our borders, whether it's the threat of terrorism, whether it's problem with wages, overcrowded schools. All can be traced back to an immigration system that, as I reported in several of my pieces for CAPSWeb.org or Front Page Magazine or The Social Contract, the three websites where my articles generally appear, this is failure by design. Failure by design. And we're not alone in this. Donald Trump has had a real problem with Angela Merkel in Germany because of her immigration policies, which has flooded Germany with God knows how many supposed refugees from Syria who can't be vetted. We see terror attack after terror attack being carried out in Europe. 2 days ago, yet another deadly terrorist attack carried out by a radicalized Brit. And we're going to have some thoughts about what that means for America, what it should mean. But how many more times do we have to see the evidence terrorism is not going away? And rather than getting more sophisticated, the terrorists have found that by being low-tech, it's easier for them to stay under the radar. And this isn't anything new, and I will share my thoughts about that in a couple of minutes. But in any event, that's what this is all about. I'm trying to provide you with the information that the mainstream media won't provide you with. And here's my challenge to you. If you watch the networks, and I don't care what network you watch, with the exception of One American News Network and Newsmax and the Danish show at Blaze TV. The other networks very rarely, if ever, have former immigration agents on to talk about immigration. Do you ever wonder about that? When the topic of discussion is the military, they bring in former generals and former Navy SEALs and commandos and admirals. No shortage. No shortage. When a new satellite is launched, when a spacecraft goes zipping by Pluto, as we saw about a year and a half ago with New Horizons, they bring in astronauts and scientists and physicists. When the story is about a homicide, they'll bring in retired homicide detectives. Maybe they'll bring in the former FBI profiler. When the story is about cancer, they bring in biologists and biochemists and geneticists and doctors. When the story is immigration, generally, you will hear from pollsters and pundits. You will hear from political consultants, whatever in the world that job description looks like. And maybe if they want to make it look like they're dealing with it from a law enforcement angle, they will bring in a supposed border sheriff, reinforcing this notion that we have four border states, when in reality, of course, if you've been listening to my program or reading my, you know, we have 50 border states. Any state that has an international airport, any state that lies along the 95,000-mile coastline of this country, any state that lies along the northern or southern borders are all border states. So who are we leaving out? But, you know, there is a narrative. It's a false narrative. And it's amazing that organizations that you would think are on our side, when they hear about the wall, they go crazy. Oh, my God, you can't build the wall. They talk about how it's unnecessary, how immigration is down. It's lie after lie. And I'll tell you, folks, if people tell you we don't need a wall, you better take a hard look at who's telling you that. You know, I've made the point time and time and time again. A wall by itself won't solve our immigration crisis. But a wall has to be seen as a component of a multifaceted approach. Now, that's the issue that's being left out of the conversation. When people talk about the wall, people like Senator Menendez, one of the eight gangsters who wanted to jam comprehensive reform down our throat, which was nothing more than amnesty, he said, oh, this is a wall of hate. It will stop commerce between America and Mexico. Goodness gracious. Does Menendez think we're that ignorant, that stupid, that foolish? Apparently, I mean, he did get elected by a bunch of idiots. How anybody voted for that guy is beyond me. Let's be fair and honest about what we're talking about. The wall would not go across our ports of entry, just make certain that all people and all goods entering the country go through the ports of entry. How in the world does that stop commerce? It doesn't stop commerce. It makes certain that commerce is legal and inspected. It means that the drugs won't get in, at least across that border in that fashion. It means the illegal aliens won't have easy access to the United States by simply hopping across the border. That's what it means. But if you listen to Menendez and if you listen to Chucky Schumer and all these other nitwits, and they are nitwits because they think we're that ignorant that we can't figure it out, they're still trying to figure out why Trump got elected. Maybe if they'd take a second and take a deep breath, they would understand that the American people are onto their lies. See, the idea of the wall is to prevent illegal commerce, narcotics, heroin, cocaine. So anybody who opposes the wall, I have a serious question for you this evening. Would you like more heroin and cocaine to flow into America? Would you like to see more children dying of overdoses? Would you like to see more gang violence in neighborhoods across the United States? Would you like to see more billions of dollars flowing out of our economy and back to the cartels, back to criminal and terrorist organizations? Because anybody who says that we don't need to secure the Mexican border, that's where it will lead. More heroin, more cocaine, more meth, more criminals, and the potential for terrorists to gain easy access to the United States. I compare the fence on the border, or wall on the border, to the wing on an airplane. The wing by itself goes nowhere, but an airplane without a wing also goes nowhere. The wing is part of an airplane. the wall needs to be part of an overarching system where immigration has real integrity. And that's what Trump is doing. A while back, I wrote an article for, I believe it was Californians for Population Stabilization. I write for so many websites. But I talked about the need to implement what I called compile rather than comprehensive immigration reform. I said what we really needed was comprehensive immigration law enforcement. Comprehensive immigration law enforcement. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, right after 9/11, when I provided testimony to the House Immigration Reform Caucus, I talked about something that I came to refer to as the immigration law enforcement tripod. And I said that the immigration inspectors enforce immigration laws at ports of entry. It's a responsibility that I'm very familiar with because for the first 4 years of my career with the former Immigration and Naturalization Service, I was, in fact, an immigration inspector assigned to John F. Kennedy International Airport in New York City. And so I said, so you need to have the inspectors enforcing the laws at ports of entry. The Border Patrol enforces the laws between ports of entry. But the third leg of that enforcement tripod that never got attention but is going to be getting a lot of attention under Donald Trump is interior enforcement. Interior enforcement. Doris Meisner was quoted by Jack Shaw, the former commissioner for enforcement for the old INS, when she said that immigration, that interior enforcement was a term of usage devised by the investigations branch that was devoid of meaning. She made certain that we never enforce the immigration laws from within the interior of the United States. Barack Obama made certain we never enforce the laws from within the interior of the United States. George W. Bush, Ronald Reagan, everybody, both parties, made sure that we never enforce the law from within the interior of the United States. Yeah, let's have more Border Patrol agents, you know, that looks good. But in reality, nearly half of all illegal aliens don't run the border but come through ports of entry. Almost all of the terrorists who attacked America came through ports of entry. So how in the world do you ignore that huge vulnerability that was clearly identified by the 9/11 Commission? It's just astonishing. It's absolutely, in fact, astonishing. Let me read something. Is the executive summary of the 9/11 Commission report, and you know I provided testimony to that commission. And here's what it starts to talk about. The final report of the National Commission on Terrorist Attacks upon the United States, Permeable Borders and Immigration Controls. This is very short, but very important. There were opportunities for intelligence and law enforcement to exploit Al-Qaeda's travel vulnerabilities. Considered collectively, the 9/11 hijackers included known Al-Qaeda operatives who could have been watchlisted. That's item number one. Item two, presented passports manipulated in a fraudulent manner. Immigration fraud, big deal. Okay, I'll talk about how big a deal this is. Number three, presented passports with suspicious indicators of extremism. Number four, made detectable false statements on visa applications. Number five, made false statements to border officials to gain entry into the United States. And finally, violated immigration laws while in the United States. Violated immigration laws while in the United States. And if you look at how the Department of Homeland Security was created by the Bush administration, George W., John Hosteller, and I wrote about this in a couple of articles, one for Caps Web and one for Front Page, at a hearing in which I testified, and Hostetler at the time was chairman of the House Immigration Subcommittee, talked about the way that the DHS was created by Bush, that it violated the Homeland Security Act that was the authorizing or enabling legislation to bring about the creation of DHS. In other words, they violated the very enabling legislation that was supposed to make us safer and made us less safe. And John Hostetler had the courage, the fortitude, the chutzpah, as we like to say in Brooklyn, to go after President Bush. Now, remember, they're both Republicans. This took a lot of guts and a lot of integrity on John Hostetler's part. And here we were 44 months after 9/11, which is how long, by the way, it took us to win the Second World War. And he noted that the way that immigration was being treated and DHS made it impossible to secure the borders, made it impossible to enforce our laws, because they cut the old INS into little pieces and blended it in with agriculture and customs and sky marshals, all kinds of stuff, put in managers from everywhere under the sun but immigration, basically, and made the whole system unworkable. And that goes back to what I've written about frequently. Immigration failures are failures by design. Everyone is upset that the immigration system is broken. It's not really broken, but the parts of it that are dysfunctional were made to be dysfunctional by George W. Bush. And those difficulties were exacerbated by Barack Hussein Obama. Both political parties literally in bed with the idea of ripping down our borders and leaving us vulnerable. So what if Americans die? Hell, you know, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, I bet they're kind of happy because they're all about business. And the funeral home industry, just like any other industry, can always use more customers. So when Americans get killed, I bet you they're smiling at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And if they want to debate me on that, here I am. I'll take you on any day of the week, Mr. Chamber of Commerce. This is about flooding America with unlimited supplies of cheap foreign labor, unlimited supplies of foreign students, and unlimited supplies of tourists. This is all about money, and they don't care who dies as a consequence. Doesn't much matter to them, because the funeral industry will make out on the deal anyway. You know, we spend an awful lot of money on developing smart weaponry overseas. Billions of dollars, really proving the brilliance of American engineers and scientists. We can shoot a missile right through a particular window of a particular building and take out an individual and not hurt any other building on the block. Unbelievable technology. You know, during the Second World War, our bombers would come in and they would carpet bomb a neighborhood so they could knock out one facility. Today, one missile, boom, they've got their target leveled. Amazing stuff. Very expensive, but the idea is about morality, to minimize, if not altogether eliminate, collateral damage. That's military speak for the death of civilian non-combatants. And I think that's very moral. I agree with the idea. My family was decimated in the Holocaust, but you don't need to have that kind of personal connection to say, look, when non-combatants are killed, it's a tragedy. It's an outrage. We try to avoid it at all costs. What about collateral damage in the United States? What about the 3,000 who died on 9/11? What about the people who were killed at the Boston Marathon? What about what happened in San Bernardino? What about the rapes and the drugs and all the other collateral damage in America? Why doesn't anybody care about that? They don't care. They don't. Get over it, folks. They do not care. Sanctuary cities. Boy, oh boy, the word alien and immigrant are interchanged purposely to confound any conversation or understanding of the issue. And sanctuary cities are anything but sanctuaries. You know, at the risk of sounding a little bit like George Carlin, when I hear the word sanctuary city, I think of babbling brooks and birds tweeting and blue skies. And oh, it just, excuse me, I get such a warm and fuzzy feeling. Don't you? Sanctuary. You feel like a place of security. It's a big, warm, fuzzy blanket. Not so much. Sanctuary cities shield and harbor illegal aliens. And there's lots of ways that somebody enters the United States illegally or becomes subject to deportation or removal after they get here. It's not everybody that's running for the United States to grab a lawnmower and start doing landscaping. And yes, there are people who come there out of desperation, willing to do that work at way lower than standard wages and so forth. And they aren't the enemy. They are exploited. They're caught in the bind. And we're just making things worse for them in their home countries by bailing out, by being the safety valve for the oligarchies of countries like Mexico. Let's be very honest. If Mexico didn't have the escape valve, the safety valve that the United States represents, they would have to implement some real changes to keep their people from ripping them apart. They would have an upheaval in Mexico. Well, maybe it's time for that upheaval. Mexico has the 16th or 17th largest economy in the world. Why then country that gave us Carlos Slim, at one point the wealthiest man in the world, who was born, educated, and does his life's work in Mexico. He now owns, at least I think he still owns, a chunk of the New York Times, if you wonder about their editorial policies. How could a Mexican be so fabulously wealthy that for a while he was on top of the very top of the food chain economically? Meanwhile, you have people living in abject poverty in Mexico. No water, no electricity. They're living in the Stone Age in the very same country. These are hardworking people, a country with lots of natural resources, and you have one extreme or the other. Mexico is an oligarchy. A couple of families control the wealth of Mexico and everyone else starves. That's what they're trying to create in America. But you also have people who are here illegally, not because they want to mow our lawns or wash dishes in the back of a greasy spoon diner, but because they've committed heinous crimes in their home countries, and not just Mexico. We get plenty of people running the Mexican border who are from countries from all over the world, including the Middle East and Asia. Africa, doesn't matter. They're looking for access to the United States where they can enter surreptitiously under the radar. Very dangerous, very dangerous. So you have fugitives from justice. You have criminals looking to come to America to ply their trades. I mean, let's face it. Where would you rather commit crime? In a country with poverty or where there's wealth? Burglars don't go to the poor neighborhoods to commit burglaries. They go to the upscale neighborhoods to commit burglaries. Think about it. You have terrorists coming to the United States. You have people who support terrorism. You have drug traffickers, and drug trafficking supports terrorism also, by the way. So that's the problem that we have. So you have sanctuary cities that are very attractive to fugitives and criminals and terrorists and gang members. And what do you think that does to the people who live within those towns and cities? They become subject and vulnerable to the violence of the thugs. And so you look at this alleged rape that occurred in Maryland. 14-year-old girl, from what I understand, she herself is an immigrant, her family are immigrants legally here, assaulted by two aliens, at least one of whom, according to news reports, illegally present, and the lawyer has the chutzpah to go on and say, oh, this was consensual. And I'm not going to get into whether or not it is, but imagine if it isn't. So now this girl is going to be victimized twice. Rape, and then the claim that she was a willing participant in her own attack. And meanwhile, you've got law enforcement saying that they heard screams and so forth. That's where we are today. The Americans and lawful immigrants are paying the price for our open borders. And make no mistake that most often the violence perpetrated by foreign national criminals on American soil involves the members of the ethnic immigrant communities. I mean, we're all vulnerable to these people. But they are more likely than not to attack people within their own community. When the Italian mob first came to the United States, the people they picked on were the Italians who came over with them. Asian organized crime. Those Chinese gangs prey on Chinese businessmen, immigrant to enforce the immigration laws. And I wrote an article for Front Page Magazine. I hope you all go and check it out. And by the way, if you like my program, if you like the articles that I write, I'm kind of a techno dinosaur. I don't Twitter and I don't do Facebook. But if you want, I would ask you, please put it out there on any social media that you can. We've got to get as many people as possible to understand what the truth is. Because, you know, John Adams was right. Facts are stubborn things, but there are very few news programs willing to deal with the truth and with the facts. I'm very proud of the work that Newsmax does and One American News Network does, and I'm always happy to go on the Dana Show on Blaze TV. And by the way, here's something that you may not know. They don't do pre-interviews where most networks do. So if during the pre-interview you say something that some producer doesn't like, boom, suddenly your invitation evaporates. Oh, you want to talk about that? Let's get back to you, Mr. Cutler. Yeah, and then the phone doesn't ring a second time. When I'm on Newsmax, when I'm on One American News Network, or when I'm on the Dana Show, no one says to me, oh, what do you plan to talk about? What do you plan to say? They simply say, we're covering this topic. Would you like to weigh in on it? And that's pretty cool. And that's pretty cool. In the past week, I've done, I think, four or five appearances on all of those different programs through the miracle of Skype. I use my own living room with my own little high-def camera, and I'm able to go on and provide my perspectives. But increasingly, it is impossible to have an honest conversation about immigration. The news is so twisted. And you have Mayor Garcetti in Los Angeles making this about bigotry. Oh, we're not going to allow our people to work with those mean, nasty ICE agents. Oh, no, no. We're not going to have families torn apart. Oh, we're not going to see people deported because they can't speak English. Ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you something. People aren't being deported because they speak with an accent. My mother, may she rest in peace, spoke with an accent. She came here as a 14-year-old girl from her native Poland ahead of the Holocaust. Her mother, was unable to get out, was killed by the Nazi bums, and I was named for my mother's mother. Many of my mother's friends spoke with an accent. Many of my friends' parents spoke with accents. This isn't about accents or an inability to speak English clearly. Just another lie. This isn't about deporting immigrants, unless they're immigrants who've committed felonies. This is about removing people who violated our immigration laws, and those laws were enacted to protect national security, public safety, public health, and the livelihoods of American workers. That's what the laws are about. There is nothing in the law about race or religion or ethnicity. Period. Period. And the media is turning Donald Trump's executive orders to keep people out of this country who can't be screened, who come from countries that are intimately, intrinsically involved with terrorism, from entering the United States until we can be certain that the people we're letting in don't want to kill us. Every news program comes on and says the six countries that are Muslim majority countries. So what are they telling you between the lines? Oh, this is about Islam. This is about Muslims. No, it is not. And if you take the time to read Donald Trump, President Trump's executive orders, it is crystal clear that what he is doing parallels what the Congress did when they had the enhanced visa waiver program, which is not enhanced. It's a joke. You know, everyone came on and said the visa waiver program is dangerous. Yeah, it keeps getting expanded because the Chamber of Commerce and their Discover America partnership. But what this is about is the fact that we know that those countries are a problem. We can't get the information we need to screen them. And when you look at Iran, and by the way, Jimmy Carter looked at Iran real hard in 1980 because the Iranians overran our embassy at Tehran. And so Iranians were barred from entering the United States with a few exceptions, just like Trump's, just like President Trump's, no difference. Except instead of just Iran, Iran is one of six countries on the Trump list. The world has changed since 1980. In 1980, we hadn't had any terrorist attacks committed on American soil. So you have a president acting responsibly to protect America and Americans, and you have people out there going crazy. Stop and think what he's trying to accomplish. Stop and think what the law says. I've written about this before. Go to Front Page Magazine. Go to Caps Web. Go to the Social Contract. By the way, in about another 3 or 4 weeks, Social Contract is due to publish the spring edition. It's a quarterly. And I have the lead article, and it's all about immigration fraud, the lies that kill. I think you'll find it eye-opening. But Trump is trying to address all those issues, not just the border wall. But again, this is all about misleading the American people. And even in London, you know, they believe he acted alone. But meanwhile, the police went out there and started making arrests, although they have released quite a few of the people they arrested. But we don't know who's a lone wolf. We don't know where these people are getting their support from. And that's why you do these investigations. But the point that I made in my article about how people that are opposed to Trump's immigration enforcement program, people like Schumer, who said, well, if you build a wall, well, you start to deport aliens, we're going to shut the government down. Think about that. And it's the same Schumer and the same Democratic Party. And, you know, again, I keep saying I'm registered as a Democrat. I just don't know what the world happened to my old party or my parents' party. But meanwhile, they want to flood America with foreign competing workers, drive down wages, and throw Americans out of work. But we're on your side, folks. That's what they're telling us. Never mind what we're doing. just listen to what I'm saying. Ignore my actions that are shafting American workers and driving down wages. It's unbelievable. Totally unbelievable, the betrayal by these politicians of American workers and their families. So they're vilifying immigration agents. So the agents are now the bad guys, and the aliens are being shielded from detection by those evil ICE agents. But meanwhile, in 2014, Senators Schumer and Gillibrand issued a joint press release. And what did they talk about? We're going to fund these programs to go after the human traffickers and take care of the victims of human trafficking. Let me tell you something, and this is an insider's view. One of the squads I was assigned to, and I did a stint in every squad within the investigations branch during my 30 years, but I spent a couple of years in the anti-smuggling unit in New York City. And we identified a safe house where illegal aliens were being brought after they were smuggled across the Mexican border. They were being driven clear across the country in rental campers, you know, the mobile home type setups. And they were being brought to this place right on the Queens-Nassau border, and it was a safe house. And we started to work with the people that were there. They started to talk to us. These were the smuggled aliens after we arrested them. And the ones who cooperated were allowed to stay here. We got them employment authorization. And they gave us the information that we needed so we could backtrack the smugglers who brought them into the United States through California. We went out to California, and we worked with other immigration agents in California, and we rounded up the smugglers and all the people that worked for them. We dismantled the smuggling ring and put everybody in jail. That could not have happened if we did not have those illegal aliens in custody who were willing to cooperate with us. If you want to put smuggling rings out of business, then you need to locate the aliens they smuggle, get them to cooperate, and by the way, we can give them visas so they can stay here permanently. If they really hit a home run for law enforcement, they can bring their families here and get green cards. Mean bums that immigration agents are, right? So understand that when you create sanctuary cities, not only are you shielding criminal aliens, not only are you potentially shielding terrorists, you're making it that much harder for immigration agents to identify and dismantle human trafficking rings. And I will tell you that in my 30 years of law enforcement, the most pernicious, violent, sociopathic dirtbags that I ever had the enjoyment of putting handcuffs on were alien smugglers. They raped young women. They beat the snot out of everybody. They robbed people blind. There was a case where one of the people that they smuggled died en route, and they told the family, if you want your uncle's body, you better give us more money. And during the night, they dropped the guy's dead body on a lawn somewhere. I mean, think about what we're talking about. These individuals are not human. They are a species unto themselves. But you can't identify and arrest them without the cooperation of the aliens they smuggle. That's how you put the case together. When an alien gets on the witness stand and points to that dirtbag and says, that's the guy I gave the money to. That's the guy who brought me to the United States. Or that's the guy who held me at gunpoint in that house. Or that's the guy who raped me. That's how you make the case. But when you have sanctuary cities, there's no way of knowing who the smugglers are. Sanctuary cities run interference for human traffickers, folks. That's how insane this is. And you have these politicians like Garcetti in California and de Blasio in New York and Rahm Emanuel in Chicago. We're going to stand up for the immigrants. Right. We're going to make sure that nobody identifies the human traffickers. We're going to make certain that nobody stops these rapes and these assaults and all these other violent crimes committed by these thugs who need to be locked up. The only way you find them isn't by magic. There's no magic here, folks. You need to arrest the aliens who are smuggled. You need to convince them to come forward and give you the information. And it's not that difficult because we can give them lawful status if they help us. And we do it every day of the week. When I say we, Of course, I haven't done that job in quite some time, but that's how it works. That's exactly how it works. But the beginning of the investigation requires the apprehension, the arrest of smuggled aliens. And smuggled aliens know that they're violating the law. They understand that, unless someone has been kidnapped, and that's a whole nother story. But again, the way we're going to get to the smugglers and free the people who are being kidnapped and free the hostages that are being taken and kept in these safe houses is to get the aliens to come forward and speak to the ICE agents. I've done hearings about this. There are visas specifically set aside, specific categories of visas for the victims of criminal aliens. Why doesn't Mayor Garcetti talk about that? Why isn't Garcetti saying to these illegal aliens, look, folks, we can go together to the ICE office. We'll have police officers go with you if you're concerned. But we need to dismantle the smuggling rings. I'll tell you why. Because they're happy that there are smuggling rings operating because they want more people to come here. That's what this goal is, to flood America with cheap labor, flood America with more people. And meanwhile, Americans are losing their jobs. Meanwhile, we're dealing with gangs and crime and narcotics, the threat of terrorism. And so now we come to the terror attack in England. And there's a couple of points that really need to be made about this. The individual who was killed by police was identified as Khalid Masood, but that was not his birth name. So apparently, he changed his names at some point when he decided to convert to Islam. And when he changed religions, he changed his name. And according to published reports, he had several false aliases. So, I mean, this is all part and parcel of the problem that we're dealing with. Now, what does that have to do with America? What does it have to do with immigration? I'll tell you what it does. Citizens of Great Britain do not need visas to come to the United States. We should be requiring visas from anybody seeking entry in this dangerous era. Back when I was an immigration inspector, in point of fact, everybody who came to the United States, with the exception of citizens of Canada, were required to have visas. And the world didn't end, but we also need to be able to find the people who overstay their visas. And this, by the way, was a point made by the 9/11 Commission, and it's a point that Donald Trump has been making. And what's the reaction? People going out there and protesting and rioting and screaming and ranting and raving. How can you protect America when you have illegal aliens entering the United States, when you have terrorists coming into America, when you admit people who go missing? And so we lack integrity to the system that is our first and last line of defense. So you look at this guy, Masood, who goes out there with a knife and a car. You know, if there's a major attack and the terrorists use airplanes or that sort of thing, every step of the way with that kind of complexity, the likelihood exists that somebody will see what they're doing. But you see, sometimes what terrorists and criminals find is that high tech leaves them more vulnerable than low tech. And I'll give you an example. Osama bin Laden realized that if he used high tech communications equipment, that the NSA and other agencies within the US government and elsewhere might be able to track his signal. So the way that Osama bin Laden was communicating with his followers, for the most part, for the last few years of his life, was through couriers who would tap him on the shoulder and hand him a written message. He would respond in writing, and then that courier would go and bring it to somebody else. We saw that in New York with the drug dealers, where they used mail drop services. They would communicate by sending packages with encoded letters to one another and mail drop services, staying off of cell phones, staying off of computers, because they knew that we could probably track those devices. So they went low tech. Is there anything more low tech than a knife? I mean, you could go back thousands of years in human history. Before there was gunpowder, there were knives. That's as low tech as it gets, short of hitting somebody over the head with a rock. Think about that. So you have a terrorist take a car, and what are we going to do? Stop all cars now? Or a truck, as we've seen elsewhere. and run down a bunch of people. And when the vehicle gets bogged down because it's run over too many bodies, or you run up against a fence, as we saw yesterday in England, and then you jump out with a knife and start stabbing people. And there was apparently a similar attack that was attempted in Brussels by an Algerian who had become a resident of France, who went berserk with a vehicle. And fortunately, he didn't kill anybody. But when police opened up the door to the vehicle, they found knives and firearms and a liquid substance that they're still analyzing, according to the latest reports that I've read. So they've gone low tech. They've gone low tech, and it doesn't require talking to anybody. So there's no necessary phone conversations. The guy wakes up one morning, maybe someone has encouraged him or educated him or her as to how to do it, gets behind the wheel, and goes flying down the road and runs over a bunch of people. You're not going to kill 3,000 people that way, as happened on 9/11, but 4 or 5 dead bodies and 30 or 40 mangled bodies, that gives them the headline they want. So screening becomes ever more critical to try to keep terrorists out of the United States and to also try to get cooperators within these communities. And again, we come back to how law enforcement operates. If you're in the community and you're arresting people and they have information, they could swap that information for a visa. It's just that simple. There's something known as a proffer session. And I can't tell you how many proffer sessions I've sat in on. And sometimes it's just an immigration agent and a prosecutor and the defendant and his lawyer. Or sometimes it could be a team of personnel from different agencies, depending on the sort of information that the alien might provide. We had drug smugglers up at DEA, and I would be a part of the proffering team because the guy also knew about alien smuggling. So now we had to make a decision. How much was the guy's information worth? Maybe he's looking at 20 years in jail because he was arrested with a load of heroin or a load of cocaine. So now you're playing the game of Monty, let's make a deal. And if the person can give you enough actionable intelligence, then we take the information, we could dismantle a criminal or a terrorist organization, protect a lot of lives, but it all starts with an arrest. It all starts with that conversation, a proffer session, where the U.S. attorney is there, the agents are there, the alien in question is there, and his attorney is there. And you get the information, and you start your investigation. Many, many, many investigations into a wide variety of major criminal conspiracies begin with that arrest. That first person that you arrest, you're pulling at the thread of a sweater, and you pull more threads, more people. And the more threads you pull, the faster the sweater unravels. The faster you get to find out what this individual or what this organization is going to do. And it's effective. It's called human intelligence. The CIA uses human intelligence overseas. Domestically, law enforcement uses human intelligence to have a window into some of these close-knit communities where normally we would not be able to know what's happening. It's not foolproof. It's inevitable that the bad guys will, on occasion, succeed. You know, they always used to say, we've got to be right 100% of the time. The terrorists only need to be right once. But please understand that when we create sanctuary cities in America, it encourages huge numbers of aliens to run the border because they know that if they can get to New York, if they can get to Chicago, if they can get to Los Angeles, they're home free. Nobody will do anything to them. Nobody. They are secure. They truly find sanctuary. And the residents of those towns and cities, they find hell. Kids are being attacked. Narcotics, gangs, the potential for terrorism. That's what we're fighting against. This is not about bigotry. This is not about racism. And Garcetti, the mayor of Los Angeles, standing there and talking about what a wonderful thing he's doing for the immigrant community. What exactly is he doing for the immigrant community? People who are here legally shouldn't be running from the police or from immigration. And I'll tell you something else. When you deal with aliens, foreign nationals who are fearful of police, very often it's not whether or not immigration agents are working with the police. It's that they come from countries where the police are corrupt where the last person you want to encounter is somebody with a badge and a gun. Not good news. That's part of the problem in Mexico, is the corruption. They give the cops a choice, silver or lead. Silver being the bribe, lead being a bullet. And it's very effective. Chapo Guzman, the notorious narcotics trafficker from Mexico, is going on trial in the Eastern District of New York. He smuggled his drugs across the Arizona, U.S. border in Arizona, but ultimately those drugs made their way to New York and Miami and Chicago and Los Angeles. But New York is getting first shot at this piece of garbage because New York apparently had the worst damage done. New York has the greatest number of illegal aliens. And it's not a surprise because New York is a sanctuary city that's providing municipal ID to illegal aliens. Why on earth would you present or provide illegal aliens with identity documents when you consider what the 9/11 Commission said about how the terrorists use fake ID and false names to conceal their identities and their movements? Why would you want to facilitate that kind of situation here in the United States? And it doesn't only threaten the residents of New York. And of course, the irony is that New York City was hammered the worst on 9/11, by far the worst, when the towers came down. You would think that if any place in the United States would want the immigration laws enforced, would look at the 9/11 Commission as a Bible and say, we are going to follow that commission findings to the letter. We lost too many people. The damage was devastating. How many people are still dying now because of the toxins they were exposed to? Talk about not willing to lock the door after the horses are stolen. The 9/11 Commission warned against false ID. And what does the mayor of New York do? Provide false ID to hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens. And now he is poised to destroy the supporting documents so that law enforcement can't make use of it to connect the dots. Whose side is he on? And when they say, well, immigration law violation is a minor offense, it's like a traffic violation, see what happens if you don't pay your parking tickets in New York City. How quickly they tow your car. Or Los Angeles. Try speeding. Oh, it's only a traffic violation. See what happens. See what happens. The notion that you can come to America illegally, and let's remember something. You get one opportunity for a first impression. And this is something I said at the first couple of congressional hearings where I testified. If you get one opportunity for a first impression, well, ladies and gentlemen, our immigration laws are generally the first laws that foreign nationals entering America or seeking to enter America encounter. So what first impression are we providing to people, especially here in New York or Los Angeles, Chicago, or elsewhere? In the United States, we welcome law violators. We are so determined to help you out that even if you commit crimes, we will make sure that immigration can't send you home. We will protect you from federal agents. Is there any other country on the planet that is as corrupt as that? Is there any other situation that is comparable, that people run the border illegally, commit identity theft, which creates hell for their victims, commit other crimes, perhaps crimes of violence, but we will shield you so that you don't have to be deported, so that your family can continue to have you? And how many of those families might even want an order of protection to keep those violent thugs within their families away from them? Go into family court and see how many orders of protection are being granted. You know, a long time ago, I wrote an article, and I said that for America, an order of deportation is the equivalent of an order of protection. Think about that. How many families, because of a violent family member, have gone to family court seeking an order of protection because there is a sociopath running loose in the family? Maybe he or she is a drug user. God knows what the situation is. There's millions of stories, you know. But they seek an order of protection. And then you have the mayors of sanctuary cities and the governors of sanctuary states who say, oh, no, we won't let criminals be deported. Why would we want to send somebody home who might kill more people in my country? Let them stay. Let them kill more people. Let them rape more little girls. This is America. We're going to be having fun. We're going to let the criminals run rampant on us. In my entire life, I sometimes look at situations and I try to understand the other person's perspective. My mother taught me that. Always try to understand how someone else might see an issue. It's a very effective tool to develop relationships, to build a consensus, to understand human nature. Try to understand the other person's side. I have to tell you, folks, I try and again, and I could never understand how a mayor or a governor or a chief of police can be happy that we have people who come into our country illegally when we spend $14 billion a year on customs and border protection to keep out terrorists, criminals, and so forth, keep out people who would compete unfairly with American workers who are desperate for that job to support their families. And then even when these illegals commit crimes, they are determined to make certain that we never deport them. Let them stay. They just want to be here. Never mind they've been arrested 10 times. Never mind they've been deported and came back, which by itself is a felony. It's not fair. They should be able to come. People should be able to cross the border with impunity. Hell, we don't need no stinking borders. And then children get raped and killed, and gangs infiltrate the schools. But that's okay. Listen, it's not okay. Donald Trump is trying hard, and I don't know the guy. I don't meet with him. I'm not on his payroll. But as an American, I can tell you that in all of my years of being involved with the immigration issue, and that goes back to 1971, I've been at this for a long time, I have never seen a president before approach the immigration crisis the way that President Trump is approaching it. What I worry about is what happens in 4 years, and if we're fortunate, 8 years. What will the next president do? What will Congress do? What will mayors do? We have got to get people into office, irrespective of which party they're part of, who are not globalists, who put America and Americans first. That's what's been lacking from the conversation. All the news accounts always focus on the poor alien who's going to be deported and how terrible it is for that family. Why don't they sit down with people like my good friend Don Rosenberg, whose 25-year-old son was run over and killed by an alien who had no right to be in the United States? Why don't they talk to the parents of other people who've been killed in the United States, parents of girls who've been raped in the United States? Why don't they get interviewed? 60 Minutes last week did an amazing story, so much so that I reached out to the producer to commend him for the work that he did. They did a story about the H-1B visas and how American workers by the thousands are losing their jobs to people from India, and adding insult to injury, they're being forced to train their replacements if they want their severance package. Now, I've been writing about this for years. But 60 Minutes did an amazing job, and they should be commended. If I'm going to throw bricks at people for being jerks, we have to throw bouquets at people when they do the right thing. 60 Minutes last week did the right thing. And the reporter even pointed out that CBS News actually had H-1B visa employees working for them. That was impressive. I hope it's the beginning of a trend. I hope journalists will go back to being journalists and truly deal with the stories the way they are and not spin some fantasy story that has no relevance to reality and where reality has no relevance to the story. The truth is vital. The truth is vital. And the American people not only deserve the truth, but they need the truth. The founding fathers understood that the First Amendment was essential because you can't have a democracy, a true democracy, without an informed electorate. You can't have a democracy when the citizens are inhibited from speaking their mind freely. Safe spaces on college campuses are anything but safe. Just like sanctuary cities, the people being protected are the anarchists and those who wish to undo America, while Americans and our very democracy are placed at risk in so-called safe spaces. My goodness gracious, George Orwell could not have made this stuff up. And that's why I always make the point that this isn't about being politically correct. This is purely Orwellian. Altering the words, altering the language to alter perceptions and understanding of key issues. As Americans, we have an obligation. Living in a democracy carries a price. And the price that goes with being a citizen of this great nation, we the people must take our citizenship seriously. The founding fathers believed that the title citizen was the highest title in this great nation. And it is. Politicians come and go, but the citizens, we are the foundation of America. And we are not of one race, one religion, or one ethnicity. America is a marvelous tapestry. We are the most diverse country in the world. And desires to enforce immigration laws and secure our borders are not about race, religion, or ethnicity, but about survival. It's as simple as that. We are at war. Make no mistake about it. And our security begins and ends at our borders, wherever they may exist. And that includes our airports and our seaports, as well as the northern and southern borders. So the immigration system, finally, for once and for all, needs to have integrity. And to date, the reason that it has lacked integrity is that the lack of integrity of our immigration system mirrors the lack of integrity of corrupt politicians, forgive the redundancy. We the people can change all that. And that's why I always like to make the point that democracy is not a spectator sport. So get involved. If you find my articles at Front Page Magazine or The Social Contract or Caps Web interesting, if you find it informative, if it's giving you information you didn't have before, I have a simple request. Tell your friends about it. Send them an email. Do it by Facebook or you know, any which way you want to communicate through the social media. But let's get the word out. Please be a part of my Bucket Brigade of Truth. And I look forward to seeing you all again next week, same time right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Meanwhile, have a great weekend, everybody.